I'd like to begin with a few words from Hazrat Inayat Khan. He says, "Thou pourest wine into my empty cup wherever we meet, on hills and dales, on the top of the high mountains, in the thick forests and in the barren deserts, on the shores of the roaring sea and on the banks of the gentle river. And there arise in my heart the unearthly passion and the heavenly joy. Thou hast won my heart 1,000 times over. Thou comest veiled under many different guises, and in every guise thou art unique. Who is not deluded by the splendor thou hast so skillfully produced on the face of the earth? In this beauty fair, thou shinest adorned in myriad garbs. Thine own is all the beauty, and it is thou thyself who art attracted by it. Thou on the stage of life actest as friend, as foe, and thou alone seest this play performed so wonderfully. I sought thee so long, my beloved, and now I have found thee at last, O winner of my heart, and in finding thee, I have lost myself. So this session will work with the teachings of Hazrat Inayat Khan in an experiential way. And I know to begin with, we have a few announcements. So Cynthia will be back. Oh, there she is. Yeah. So we're stirred to the depths of our souls by these words of the mystics and the poets who carry this attunement of the Sufis that is shattering to the heart, to the mind, to the body, and has an alchemical transformative effect upon the soul. So we have a taste of participating in this together in this conference, and in doing so, celebrating this varied and diverse guises of the beloved in the search for touching the essence. What I'd like to do with this session is to divide it into two. So we'll stop about 3:15. 3:10, something like that, and have a little break for water or for the restroom. But then also I'm very aware that there's a rich palette here, so you have my permission, if you wish, to, let's say, reform your grouping or your group at that time. If you choose to return, we'll be working with what the Sufis call the planes of consciousness. Many times what the mystics say is, what I have to offer you is a perspective. That's what I have to offer you. And in these words of the mystics, we hear things and they make sometimes no sense because there's not a way we can put them together with our rational mind. What they are is glimpses of a perspective that this has come through the heart and the soul of the poet, of the mystic. And in the Sufi practice, there is a very clear and, very refreshing, at least to my point of view, way of looking at the fullness of what it means to be human, that our perspective does indeed shift. So, as I say, after the break, that's what we'll be working with. Now, I would like to say just a few words about what I do. I work as a representative of the Sufi Order International, and for those of you who know Pir Vilayat Inayat Khan and Pir Zia Inayat Khan, they are the elders of this particular lineage. And my work within that is primarily, well, twofold. One is working with the teachings of Inayat Khan and making them alive in our time. This is something that's being developed by Pir Vilayat as a curriculum, and it has a very dry sound to it, but the teachings are so rich and so relevant to our situation now that Well, this is part of my work. And the other part of my work is in the retreat process. I guide retreats, individual retreats, small group retreats, long retreats, short retreats. And in the years that I've done this, have discovered that the retreat being is a being. And this you will experience at this gathering. This happened the last time when we were in California. There are stages in the retreat where one is shattered and reformed, and it has a way of transcending, let's say, the individual offering. So it's a very, very rich and wonderful time. And also, I'd like to pick up on something that was offered as a kind of throwing down the gauntlet, I felt, at the end of the last conference with Llewellyn's wonderful closing remarks. And they were to, and actually Andrew addressed it last evening, to be useful, to enter into a place of spiritual activism. And so the first part of our session will work a little bit with what that means. I'd like to begin with how one usually begins a retreat, and that is by a process of invocation and clarification of intention. So as you've offered and you've come to be full participants here, this will be our first group practice together. We'll begin by saying our name in a way that invokes not only our personality, not only our heritage at a, let's say, a cultural level, a personal level, but also that tone of our soul that, let's say, resides in the essence of who we really are. So that's a big challenge right there. But to be cognizant of this as you say your name with all fullness and hopefulness, and also, if you wish, to share a word or two about what has impacted you thus far or what you wish for from this weekend. That will be helpful to me and to us and to you. So I'll begin. Amida is my name. It derives from two sources, the Buddhist tradition, the Amitabha Buddha. So as a Sufi, I have a Buddhist name. And was given by my Sufi spiritual teacher for very good reasons. But as I've learned, it has many other associations as well. And one of them has to do with the standing prayer in Judaism, standing silent prayer. And that has deep meaning for me at this moment. And I hope to share that with you as a practice toward the end of our first part together. So would you be brave enough to go next? Thank you. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls, who form the embodiment of the Spirit of Guidance. And again, toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Spirit of Guidance. There are many different interfaith groups and conferences which gather people of unlike traditions together in the name of peace. And I know many of you are familiar with them. There's one that's reached me by the internet. I'm not sure how, but it moved me very deeply, one of their recent reviews of a conference that they had. It's called Bet Midrash, and they have meetings both in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv of Buddhists of people of all different faiths, but particularly Sufis and Muslims, Sufi sheikhs and rabbis, working to bring peace to the Middle East. And the woman who reported this said, well, there was the talk on the sanctity of the human being, which is so essential to both our time and the essence of mysticism from all paths. What does that mean? Where does God begin? Where does the human begin? What's the relationship between the two? But in this post, they said that, I'll begin in the middle, only the love to God makes possible the love to creatures. God has to be the focus of human life rather than human rules. In front of God, all people are equal and everyone has the responsibility to create peace. And then they said this presented a lively discussion amongst the audience, and this is the part that struck me most deeply. Participants emphasized that the idea of love to each other isn't real in these difficult times. And then the sheikh stressed that every human being has to ask his, her heart, and then to act in the world. So we know this from our own experience, and we'll really like the tent caterpillars. What I'd like to do is invite us to look at, let's say, not only those that we love in our life, those that inspire us and move us because they indeed provide inner guidance for us, but also to look at the edges of our love and find where it is difficult to love. So to invite into this heart that is opening someone that, for whatever reason, in our own life is maybe not so easy for us to love, and to look at that as we share this time together. So to begin with, here are some thoughts of Hazrat Inayat Khan on the mystic's vision and how it pertains to what is needed in the world at this time. He says, humankind is far removed from nature, both within and without, and has become an exile from the ideal state of life. No one can be deprived of their human inheritance. There is a treasure within which has to be found. The essence of spirituality and mysticism is the readiness to serve the person next to us. Mysticism need not teach brotherhood. I'd like to say a word here because, of course, we've become aware of gender equity, how important it is to use a gender-inclusive word. So in the Sufi order, this has been replaced by the word kinship. So where I say kinship, when Hazrat Inayat Khan spoke, he said brotherhood, because he was speaking at the time in the early 1900s when there wasn't that sensitivity and awareness to the meaning of that word. It was just, let's say, unfolding in a new stage. And all right, so that's enough. So mysticism need not teach kinship, for a mystic becomes one by nature. Mysticism culminates in kinship. Mysticism culminates in kinship, a kinship which is unlike any other in the world. Thus, the kinship of a mystic is not limited to a certain section or division. It envelops all. Mysticism makes the mystic tolerant towards other people's opinions, makes him her rise above divisions, makes her him assimilate all that is heard and seen, gives one love for God, whom one sees in all beings, gives one the sympathy by which one is attracted to every person one meets, helps one to understand and to admire all things and to appreciate all beings, and in that way come nearer to all that exists. All right, before we go further, I'd like for us to share in the practice of breath that works with the different centers, the subtle centers of the body. And also, if you're familiar with yoga, the chakras, or with yoga and Buddhism, and also modern science, the central nervous system is the central column in which all the information goes from the brain throughout our body. And then as it forks out, the nerves come into the afferent and efferent nerves, and that's how we process stimuli and how we take it up into our, mainframe and make sense of it, bring meaning to the stimuli around us. So in this looking towards the mystic's vision, we're encouraged to develop our inner life, to work with these subtle layers of our being, and to allow that to inform us fully. Llewellyn spoke last night about being awake at all levels of our being. So this is like this. And this breath has a pattern to it, which I'll lead you in, and the purpose of, on the left channel to the Sufis is the receptive channel, and the right is the expressive. Beauty, wisdom, subtlety, and power, in the language of the Sufis, Jalal. And they're united in this central channel, the Shashumna, where, there's only the natural filters between the subtle layers of our being that are there because they belong there. They are part of the fabric of the inner life, but they don't hinder us or keep us at a certain level, don't keep us stuck, in a certain part of our being. So this is for clearing the tubes of the body, the physical breath and the subtle centers. And it begins with a strong exhalation, and also with a mudra, if you wish to join in. You place the right hand, the thumb of the right hand, under the chin. There's a very subtle center there, and even by placing it, it makes one aware of the, the higher centers in the head. And then the pointer finger opens and closes the right nostril, the left hand is cupped over the right, and the thumb opens and closes the left nostril. So we'll do each of these breaths five times each, and I like to think of this as a pattern of clearing left to right, right to left, of the subtle side channels, and then in through those side channels and out through the mouth, which involves the central channel as the second part, and then finally, without the hands in this position, involves entering into a deeper dialogue with the subtle layers of our being. So we begin with an exhalation, and inhale and exhale through the left nostril only, five times. At a very natural rhythm, allowing it to slow and feeling the shifts that naturally will occur as we move from the outside to the inside. And then when you're ready to move with the inhalation and the exhalation through the right nostril only, and as one breathes, to feel not only one is breathing in the life force, prana, but awakening the subtle essence of one's being. And then ending on an exhalation, inhaling through the left nostril, exhaling through the right.
And then reversing, inhaling through the right, exhaling through the left. And then when you're ready, inhaling through the left, exhaling through the mouth. And in a very fine stream through the mouth, through pursed lips, so that the breath becomes increasingly subtle and refined, but very natural, not a held breath. Not a forced breath, very natural. And then in through the right and out through the mouth. Full exhalation, and then in through the mouth, out through the left channel of the nose. And then in through the mouth and out through the right nostril. And on the last breath, you can take the hands away and breathe in and out through the nose. And this breath is called the earth breath. Very natural breath, inhaling and exhaling through the nose, both nostrils. And it has a kind of emotion, like the element of earth that nurtures us, sustains us. So we discover this not only, let's say, in the planet, but also in the fabric of our being, because we're made from the same building blocks as the other life forms. Has the emotion of rootedness and security. And then the, you know, this is a breath one breathes quite naturally through the day. And then the breath moves to the next phase, which is inhaling through the nose and exhaling through the mouth, and feeling a stream of release through the breath. And also through the subtle layers of one's being, this is a breath which comes like a sigh. We know this, you know, after a good cry or in falling asleep, it allows a lot of tension to be released. But let's say more than a stress reduction, this attunes us to that emotion of purity. You know, the word Sufi comes from the word saf, pure. And the Sufis say the spiritual life is a natural life, life of purity. So we discover in ourselves that place of purity. And then the breath changes, inhaling through the mouth, exhaling through the nose. And this helps to awaken in us the, let's say, the power of conviction. You know perhaps how this sometimes comes very naturally when one gears oneself up to address something that's difficult, steel oneself, so to speak. It also, in this breath, has the effect of attuning ourselves to the body of truth. So it will awaken an emotion of courage, clarity, passion, the fire element. And as it's refined, let's say, drawn in through the cauldron of the solar plexus and emitted through the radiance of the heart, bestows light, love, kindness, truth, majesty. So this inheritance that we draw on, that we all naturally possess, is ours even through the breath. And then the air element, inhaling and exhaling through the mouth. The breath of freedom.
ecstasy. On the exhalation, we expand the notion of who we think we are into the cosmos, into the body of the universe. And on the inhalation, draw into our being that which is unique, which is our signature tune. You know, we know this even genetically, that we're genetically mainly alike, 99.9 something. And that tiny bit of difference that gives each of us a unique stamp. Well, to the Sufi perspective is the sanctity of the divine being in humanity as humanity, the divine ishq, what the Sufis call the ishq Allah, the desire of God to be manifest in creation so that he, she can know him, herself. Hazrat Inayat Khan says, God discovers his perfection in our imperfection, constantly evolving, constantly becoming anew. And on the other hand, we as human beings feel in ourselves this longing for the divine, which is beyond any limitation, any path, any practice, any words, this longing for the divine. And it confers upon our being a sanctity, the sanctity of being human. And so the breath ends with, let's say, an inhalation with this air breath, allowing that uniqueness to configure itself in our being, and then returning to a natural breath, inhaling and exhaling through the nose, and let's say capturing the tone of the inner life. You know, as we open our eyes and shift in our chair, not to lose that fine thread that connects us to a place of, well, it's secret because it's sacred. The Sufis call it the sir, the secret. Well, in this learning to love each other, Hazrat Inayat Khan says that there are stages in the development of the ideal of mysticism. That it begins by the mystic becoming respectful to all beings, to the saint, to the sinner, to the wise, to the foolish. So perhaps with this, let's say, edge of our love, we begin by being respectful. Questioning, how is this possible that this is the beloved? Opening our hearts and our souls to the answer that will come from within. If it comes from without, doesn't have the same power. Then Inayat Khan says, once the mystic sympathy, from respect to sympathy. Sympathy goes out to everyone he, she meets, no matter who it is. And then one understands the condition of every person because of this sympathy and respect. So what is the condition of that being? What does it look like? How did that being come to be there? I was associated, well, have been for a long time, with the work of Amnesty International, and they produced a movie that was very powerful called The Making of a Torturer, Your Mother's Son, in which the people of the junta were interviewed in the 1970s about how they had been recruited and brought into this work. And let's say it showed just the opposite of these qualities. Kind of hardening of the heart. And these young men particularly who'd been brought from the villages who were innocent of, let's say, the ways of modern life had been well preyed upon. The kind of feeling of separation aroused as a feeling of hatred in their being, for which they had great shame and remorse, some, at least the ones interviewed in this video afterwards. But, well, let's say to turn the tables on it, one gives the opportunity for respect, for sympathy, for understanding. And then through this, one tolerates and forgives. One cannot help doing so because one understands. Tolerance and forgiveness come from understanding. And then finally, one sees oneself united with all, not only in God, but even in oneself. In each being, one sees oneself. All destruction caused by the fighting of sections of humanity is all caused by a lack of mystical understanding. The world can never be happy, nor can order or peace ever be maintained in the absence of kinship. This kinship can be learned, and every person has facilities for learning it in life. Kinship is a tendency which arises from a heart that is tuned to the proper pitch. And it is in this natural tendency that the real happiness lies, from which rises harmony and which culminates in peace. The message of kinship is a message of sympathy, a message of harmony. What the world needs most today is the mystical outlook, to look upon the world with the mystic's attitude and to see the whole of humanity as one, the single being, the only being. We need today the religion of tolerance. In daily life, we can't all meet on the same ground, being so different, having such different capacities, having such states of evolution that are different, and different tasks. So if we didn't have tolerance, if we had no desire to forgive, we could never bring harmony to our soul. For to live in the world is not easy, and every moment of the day demands a victory. So if there is anything to learn, it is this tolerance. And by teaching this simple religion of tolerance to one another, we are helping the world. And then finally, there are many relationships, there are many connections in this world, but the greatest relationship is friendship, and it is the culmination of friendship which is called kinship. Kinship means perfect friendship. One who realizes the relation of friendship between one soul and another, the tenderness, the delicacy, the sacredness of this relationship is living. And in this way, we'll one day communicate with God. So there's the thought that love from above is forgiveness. Love from below to above, devotion. Love from within, an awakening of kindness. And love from without, affection. So perhaps these are clues as to how to bring love into our life in its many different relationships. Now, one of the great gifts of Islam to the Sufi path is this invocation of the divine names, which derive from the Quran as an expression of the sacredness in existence and manifestation of the divine being, the one and only being. So we have a way of invoking the quality of harmony through invocation of the word Fazl, spelled F-A-Z-L, which means blessing, and is said in a particular way, and also the word Hu, which means the divine presence. So bringing harmony and presence into life here at this juncture, this coordinate, let's say, of the multidimensional universe. Here we are, right here. And as we do this, to remember that we do this, if especially from within, the power of what we do from within has such an impact, a much greater impact even than the greatest work on the outside. In my work with Amnesty International, I encountered a wonderful being who was a Czechoslovakian refugee who gave tirelessly of herself to this work. And so hopeful, so full of light, so full of energy, so wise. And so I asked her once, what was the secret of this? How was it that she could have reconciled what had happened to her and her family during World War II, and also to continue this work, which is, well, you know, it's like the passion that was awakened this morning. One needs to harness it, let's say, and to learn to work with it so that one isn't exhausted by it totally. Now Andrew may say something different, but but there is a way and a need for functioning in the world. So she said to me she had a friend that she lived with who was disabled and never left the house, and that it was her prayers and her work, this work of this friend, that gave her the strength that she needed. I heard the same thing from Mother Teresa, that she had been in very close contact with a cloistered nun in Belgium, and that that she attributed a lot of the work that she did and the efficacy of it to the prayers of this being that she was so close to. So I say this to give us a kind of hope that our inner prayers have a great effect. So this word Fazl is said directly into the heart, like a gong, like the Buddha striking a gong, to awaken vibration. Fazl. Bye.